Welcome to episode 305 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Maureen Antunes, joined by fellow co-hosts. We'll start with you, Bill. You're on that side of the screen.
Bill Harris, how's everybody doing?
Good.
Yeah, don't everybody talk at once.
Copy.
Strong silent type on a podcast. Yeah. I'm Steve Stebbing.
I'm Melissa McDowell.
Welcome back, guys. It is sooner than the last time, which is great. We're actually on schedule. Drama. But okay, we got lots of movies to talk about and not a lot of time. So why don't we jump right into the movie of the episode, which is You Hurt My Feelings, Nicole Holofcener's new film, which sadly I have not seen. So I will stop talking now.
I mean, there's no better pairing. Well, I mean, Holofcener and Keener is a great pairing, like, because they've done a lot of great work, but there's a really great connection between her and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And I mean, Julia kind of needed a win after You People, because she is just downright dreadful in that movie. Well, I mean, the whole freaking movie is dreadful. Like, it's a horrible, horrible CGI'd kiss mess. And to see her kind of return to form was really great. I had flashbacks to Enough Said, which I adore that movie so much. And she has really great chemistry with Tobias Menzies, who is just like, I feel like for like a large part of the broad audience, they're like, they know that face. They've seen him in so many different places and they just can't tie a name to it, but he is always, always, always underrated. The character that I really loved in this one was the actor brother-in-law. And just,
that's because Arian Moyed is incredible.
He's like, so great.
He's so charismatic on screen.
Yes.
And he totally pulled focus. And I think that I saw an interview with the cast where they were all talking about, it's his theater background, like, really comes into play, and like, he's quite playful to work against, mm-hmm. and he's always trying new things. So yeah, I found he totally pulled focus for me in that film too. I love him.
And Nicole can do awkward scenes to a T. That there's a dinner scene between all of them that is so well constructed and so well put together, and has just such rumblings of people know things and are going to reveal things and stuff. And it's just so well put together. And so it's crazily relatable for a film that is basically about rich intellectuals in New York. It's, I found it. I was just like, oh, okay. Like, you can actually believe and resonate with these characters. And I really like that.
I thought it was a fun script. I thought it was really well acted and directed. I just wanted a little more from it. It's very straightforward. She's a really good director, but I really wanted something like Lovely and Amazing or Please Give, something that had a little bit of bite to it. I was expecting it to build to something, and it just didn't quite get there, but it's still a pretty damn watchable movie. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is really great. Tobias Menzies is great. The son kind of bugs me, but he's just kind of written that way, I think.
Owen Teague. I actually love Owen Teague. I think he's a really compelling actor too.
And I could believe that Owen Teague is their son. I could really believe that. Even looks-wise, I'm like, yeah, that could be the mesh of both of them.
And the whole thing about Tobias Menzies' character forgetting stuff, it's just made me laugh so much. Like, yeah. Awkwardness about, like, the stuff he was saying and how, like, it was completely wrong. And, oh, it was good stuff. I just wanted something more from it. It's still a pretty damn good movie, but just missing something for me.
I'm with you, Bill, because I felt like this was, like, almost like a series of vignettes and not an actual coherent full film. And I think because the performances were good and because the theme was so good, like, really this is an exploration of sort of the little white lies that we tell the people that we care about in order to continue supporting them and being enthusiastic for whatever it is they do, whether it's like their career or creative work or whatever. I mean, I think everyone has been in a situation where you haven't been fully honest about your opinions on something that someone has done or made. because you don't really want to crush them with that. I thought it was really interesting how, you know, sort of the central premise is about a wife finding out that her husband doesn't like her book. But there's also this whole undercurrent where their son comes to them and says, like, hey, like, you told me I was a great swimmer. You put me in advanced swimming classes. And I wasn't. I was an average swimmer. Like, you've totally built me up, like, in these weird ways. And, you know, and it all kind of comes out that it's because, like, her character was really mistreated by her father, you know, who called her shit for brains for most of her childhood. And she didn't want to make those same mistakes with her kids, but it's like overcorrection. And I think like that's what is really beautiful about this movie is that kind of navigation through relationship. And when are we being supportive? And when are we like unrealistically inflating someone? Like, when is honesty required? I think is a question that we all have to navigate in every relationship that we have. And that's what I thought was so cool about this film. But I also felt like it sort of missed the boat a little bit because it just didn't feel fully fleshed out or put together. It felt more like a collection of scenes than a film.
Yeah. And it fully has like a trail off to it. Like even the ending feels very much like a trade off, like a kind of just like things happen. You don't really need to know. But yeah, I mean, I feel like at the heart of this is basically about the pitfalls of trying to fill somebody else's bucket when you have nothing in your bucket. Mm-hmm. Because like even Tobias Menzies, he's trying to, you know, he's trying to bolster his son and bolster his wife's confidence and everything, but he's like checked out at his job, which leads me, I think the low key MVP in this movie is David Cross and Amber Tamblyn, who are just
hilarious.
They're yeah. so good. Their scenes are my favorite in this movie, especially their last stuff in this movie. And just the last tinge of their appearance in this movie is really funny to me, especially their demands of Tobias Menzies is just kind of like really funny, and the extrapolations they take. But yeah, I mean, it is one of the weaker Holofcener films, but that doesn't say a lot because she's still so great even when she's weaker.
Yeah, her back catalog is incredible. Mm-hmm. If you want to check some great movies out, as I said, Lovely and Amazing was the first film I ever saw from her, and it just blew me away. Mm-hmm. It's incredible, and Please Give is really good too. But yeah, and it's just it's a good movie.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That's about it for me. It's like a 3.5, 4 out of 5 all day.
Yeah. I think that's what I gave it, 3.5.
I would say too, like, I love Michaela Watkins.
Yes.
And I think she is also an unsung MVP in this film because she is great. And she plays off Julia really well. And I guess like I saw an interview where they were talking about, it wasn't clear like when they first in the script, it wasn't clear that they were going to be sisters. They were going to potentially be friends. But because of the chemistry between the two actresses, they actually decided to make them sisters. And I think it was a bit stronger because of that. But yeah, really, this is an interesting film because, yeah, there's so much going on there. There's like every single one of these characters is struggling. They're at that midlife point where they're struggling with, is what I'm doing what I should be doing?
Mm-hmm,
All of them are. And all of them are feeling like they're not great at their jobs at this point. And their jobs are not fulfilling at this point. And so, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot to relate to, but I don't know. I dragged my boyfriend to this and it was definitely not his kind of film. He was like, I bet that plays really well in like Kits and in the West Side or something. Like it is, as you said, Steve, like very much geared to this like sort of upper class white intellectual experience. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. not, yeah. So it may be relatable for us. I don't know, relatable on the whole. I think the theme is relatable, like that theme of honesty, like trying to find the path to honesty with your partners and when it's support, you know, that kind of stuff I think is like universally a thing, but some of the career angst might not be relatable for a lot of people.
Yeah. It's not broad and on surface level, it's not broad at all. Like it really isn't. But then once you get into the nuts and bolts and the emotion of it, then it's relatable. Then it's like, oh, I can get this. I can get a foothold in this.
What, he didn't like a 5-minute riff on socks?
We also had like, so in our screening, which was not incredibly well attended because we went like 4 o'clock on a Saturday, But there was like a really loud laugher in our screening, like who thought everything in this movie was hilarious.
Oh god.
And I was like, okay, like some of it's, you know, it's like this, you know, kind of smirky, but it's not like laugh out loud, like guffaw laughter, which is totally what this guy was doing. So weird. I don't know if he like smoked some good bud before he went into that screening.
We all have to.
That's not a given for every movie. What?
He
was not watching the same movie as we were watching. That's all I can say.
I will say the therapy scenes are laugh out loud for sure.
Yes.
And then there's that the thrift market scene where
you're only allowed one piece of clothing per day.
That shit was hilarious.
So good.
I laughed my ass off, and they're bickering at the table, and then her telling that woman telling her off or whatever. And then Michaela Watson is just rude right back to her. And she's like, what are you doing? Like, she called me. I don't know. It was so great.
That was so great. White liberalism on display right there. That was a great scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
For exactly that reason. Peak white liberalism.
Yeah. No, I dug it.
Should have thought, Marina.
Well, I will get around to it, but it sounds like it's a winner then.
Yeah. I say it's worth watching for sure. For sure. Especially if you liked her other work, then yeah, you definitely should grab it.
I'm a fan of Friends with Money. I really like that one.
That's an underrated one, in my opinion, and it has such a great cast to it. And is Jennifer Westfeldt in that one? I think she's in that one.
Don't remember.
Huge cast. It's like
this is it.
A really big cast. But yeah, it's really got a really great Adam Scott performance in it that I really like.
Yes, fully agree. Mm-hmm. Now, what? There was a second movie that we were talking about that was the potential for the movie of the month. I can't remember what it is now off the top of my head.
Was it Past Lives?
Yeah, which hasn't opened yet.
Which hasn't aired yet. Yeah, this coming Friday. So
yeah,
there's no spoilers going out for it. So I won't be able to see it.
More on that later.
It looks fantastic. But it looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It looks amazing. I'm all about a before type movie.
Yeah, there. Yeah. So what should we go? What should we talk about next? Who wants to go next? Who's got movies? I know Bill's got movies. Oh. Maybe we should leave Bill for last.
Oh, we got movies.
I didn't see Mission Kandahar, okay?
I did.
Okay?
I did. You mean the Covenant adjacent?
So tell us, Steve, is it as bad as it looks?
I don't think it's awful. I honestly didn't think it was awful. I was kind of slightly entertained. Like, not like it's not going to blow anyone's hair back, and it's not like a must-see movie in at all. Like, it's kind of like if you're bored type movie. But I mean, who can play a grizzled behind the lines contractor better than Gerard Butler, who has gone from like this like mid-2000s like heartthrob to like, man, someone hit him with a shovel like over and over again. Like he is looking rough these days. But I don't know, him and Rick Romanois, who did Greenland, which was better than I expected it to be at all. I don't know, they can gel slightly together to make a pretty cohesive movie. So I don't know, I was okay with it. It's nothing special. We've seen the story before. But yeah, it's a Gerard Butler vehicle through and through, and you can tell it's just like, it's this element.
No. Well, you're talking to hit us with some more movies. What else have you seen recently that
I didn't hate? Little Mermaid.
Oh, I think Bill's got words about that.
I honestly didn't hate it. It's way too long, way too long. And cause like my kid checked out. My kid couldn't sit still for all 2 hours and 15 minutes of it. So they checked out in the third act. But
I'm sorry. Wait, The Little Mermaid is over 2 hours long.
It's 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Ow.
Long. It's 2 hours.
The original is 83 minutes.
Yeah.
This is why I'm thinking, how is this possible?
Added songs, stretching out of sequences. Like, I mean, I don't know. I just I think maybe because I had the bar set so low. But I think it's one of the better live action reimaginings, which isn't saying much, obviously, when it comes to this Disney and this Uncanny Valley stuff. There's some seriously janky ass CG in it. Especially with like Ariel swimming towards the camera. It's like, oh, what is that? Like, there's some really messed up stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't hate it. So,
Bill.
Okay. Well, as I said last episode, I had heard it was bad, but I really wanted it to be good. Like, this should be a film for this generation's like people who want a good Little Mermaid movie and who haven't seen the first one and just want to be wowed by it. But first off the top, Halle Bailey is really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
She can sing. Mm-hmm. It's just the rest of it that's not very good. As Steve said, the CG is just bad. Everything's kind of, it's dark, but also kind of got a weird shine to it that all the characters look really out of place. Why didn't they get some of that Jim Cameron stuff and like steal the Avatar stuff? Because they own it.
Yeah.
Just a thought. it's poor. The songs don't sound right. Under the Sea didn't sound right. The characters are not good. Like, Flounder is not good. The crab looks weird. David Diggs is pretty good as the crab, but Jacob Tremblay is not very good as Flounder. There's a bunch of new songs, including a really terrible Lin-Manuel Miranda kind of rapish song that I didn't like at all. The Prince Eric sings to the fucking sea for 5 minutes, and it's terrible.
It's his angsty song.
Oh, it's terrible. But you know what? I think kids, other than Steve's kid, I think kids will dig it. It's just another pointless Disney remake. The original was quite fine. It's like a movie with subtitles being remade in English. Totally pointless.
Okay, I have not seen the movie, but I did read a review that talked about how what they really appreciated about it was that the parts of the things with the extended scenes and Eric singing at the sea and all this were to create a stronger connection between him and Ariel. And so that their relationship was actually based on more than she saw a hot guy.
You know? Which is basically what the movie is.
That's essentially, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and so the idea was that they're both people who feel out of place in where they are. And that was supposed to build connection and make their relationship less one-sided and more interesting and more realistic and a better example of a relationship for young girls. So maybe I haven't seen it. So your opinion may be the definitive one, Bill.
Know what they say.
But there could be more to it, hopefully.
Also, yeah. Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wait, tell me who he plays, please.
Poseidon.
Oh my God, is he amazing?
No.
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 He's a little checked clearly out now.
Clearly his kids are like, Dad, you need to make this movie.
Yeah, he's a little checked out now, it feels. It feels standard low-key, like Bardem now.
Yeah. Yeah.
His shine's been dulled by the big Hollywood films, I think, a bit.
Yeah, and the CG with his beard and his body and his hair is really strange. You have to see it to believe it. But, you know, one other thing I will point out, Melissa McCarthy is actually kind of fun in the film.
I really dug her in it, and I she doesn't fall into any tropes that she's created for herself. Like, she really is playing it very, very close to the animated version as well, with this kind of, like, drag queen flair to it as well that I think works really well. But yeah, I think it's really unfortunate that this came out within the same calendar year of Avatar, because it just really just dulls its luster so much and makes the underwater shit look terrible, which is a good chunk of your movie. So yeah, it just.
Can we touch on the makeup controversy for a
minute? Oh yeah, well
yeah, because that was like, it was kind of a big deal. Like, first of all, I'm fully on the side of the people who are like, Ursula's makeup in this film looks janked and terrible, and like janked not on purpose. Like, it is uneven and weird, and like, they forgot that the character was based on Divine. It's really interesting. And then the makeup artist got all defensive, and he was like, "Oh, what do I need to be gay in order to do makeup properly?" It's like, no, you just actually need to do a good job of the makeup and remember the source material. But yeah, it looks pretty terrible. So I'm glad to hear that Melissa McCarthy was able to overcome her terrible makeup job. And still,
I didn't know about this makeup thing, but now that I think about it, she does look like Divine in Pink Flamingos.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she does. Yeah, definitely.
But not enough. That's the criticism. She doesn't look enough like Divine. Like, no, the original Ursula character definitely looks like Divine.
No, but I get it. Like, it's there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's just maybe not as prominent. Much, but it's fine. People need to calm down.
Yeah. I agree. But it's like a
uneven. Like, if you look at the makeup stills, it's totally uneven. It was not great. That's all I'm saying.
Like the rest of the film.
speaking of not great, I skipped over one, and I know Bill's like, what the fuck are you skipping this one? But Fast X, the ChatGPT written film.
It
was actually written by writers, but you can't really convince me that it was written by writers. Seeing a script, I mean, they should subtitle Fast X, Dom looks at photos.
Because I mean, I said
he looks at so many photos throughout the whole movie and just wistfully looking at photos. And these are not photos. These are actually stills from the movies just put into a frame. And it's so fucking obvious at every turn. There's even a thing where he goes back to Brazil. And because we remember Elsa Pataky, Chris Hemsworth's wife, was the mother of his child who was killed by Cypher in Furious 8. Fate of the Furious. I just really don't like saying that title. But even the memorial shrine to her, the picture in the frame is literally just a still from Fast Five, like straight up a still with her in her uniform, all that stuff. Like not like a casual photo of her in a nice dress. No, it's literally some shot from Fast Five. And it's just every piece of the dialogue is horrible. You feel like they gave Marita Moreno like a fat paycheck just to be in the first part of the movie to like help for retirement funds or something like that. And I love Rita Moreno, but like, I mean, between this and 80 for Brady, it's like, what the fuck are you doing? God damn it, Sister Peter Marie. Tiny things that I like in this movie. I talked about this off air, as I really like the dynamic between Ludacris and Tyrese, because Tez and Roman are frenemy bros for life, and I kind of dig that. And Jason Momoa is in a separate movie having the time of his life, doing the most gender fluid stuff in this movie too, which I really loved about it. His character is not a Fast and Furious character. It doesn't feel like a Fast and Furious character whatsoever. But, and there's like a scene towards the middle of the movie that is so dark in character that it doesn't belong in the series. But yeah, it's weird. This movie is just weird and bad. But stupidly entertaining in scenes that you're just like, this is so fucking dumb, but I'm still kind of here.
I think it's the worst film I've seen this year, like full stop. And you know what though? Like, how much did Justin Lin shoot of this film? He left halfway through.
Did he?
Supposedly.
It still feels so much like a Louis Leterrier film, and I think that's one of his biggest downfalls as well.
Yeah, for sure. He isn't quite there. No, it's. The script is absolutely terrible. I just love watching Vin Diesel try to emote. It is just the greatest thing ever. And there's multiple scenes in this film where he is like looking at the sky trying to cry or something. And it's just like,
that's true.
It is not coming. Like, there's nothing there. No. It's really bad. Sloppy direction, sloppy CG. Yeah. John Cena and his love of Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch might be the worst scene I've seen in a film in a very long time.
And that sounds genius.
It's what? A complete character deviation too, because Jacob, like, think of Fat F9 and this character they set Jacob up to be, and then he in Fast 10, he's completely different. Completely different. He's goofy. He's a
babysitter.
He's goofy. He's just, oh, it's just, there's so many issues. And I mean, I don't even want to get into the spoiler with his character, but it's just like, why even bring him in? Why?
I know.
It doesn't make any sense.
So yeah, his love of Marky Mark even has a dance where he's like moving his shoulders back and forth. It gets really bad.
It's so bad.
Yeah, it's so terrible. Don't even get me started on that stinger. But hey, it's a really, really terrible film from a franchise that has been really bad for many films. And I don't know why I even watched it. But as Melissa said, I watch everything except for Mission Kandahar and The Machine. I didn't see that one either. But no, it's terrible.
Stunt in the commercial did look good though. Like the one stunt in the trailer with the helicopters, he's like connected to the.
Oh yeah,
that looked awesome. Actually, that's probably why you saw it.
Because you see it in the trailer, so it's not a spoiler. There's a part where they blow up a big piece in the Vatican City, and the shockwave ripples and throws every other car off the road, like through the air off the road, except for Dom. Dom keeps his front two tires on the road because he's got enough weight and he's a good enough driver that he can keep it all on the road. And it's just like, fuck you, fuck this, fuck off. Fuck all of it. And another thing is that Vin Diesel obviously went to Neil Moritz and everybody in the original film, and he's like, I want this to be Avengers Infinity War for the Fast movies. And that's what they did.
Yeah.
Exactly what they did. And it's so obvious. It's so fucking obvious. And it's just, especially when you know they're stretching this in other two movies. You're just like, good fucking God. Tell me now.
I just, like, I don't know when this franchise went so far off the rails. I think it was probably... I think it was 6, actually, for me. I mean, 5. So, I mean, for me, it's the holy trilogy. The first three movies are like the holy trinity of the Fast movies. And 2 is terrible. So bad. Like, usually for me, it's 1, 3, and then 2. 4 was okay. It kind of started to, I think that's when Justin Lin came in and it kind of started to build this thing where like the stunts got bigger. And then 5, you had that stupid thing with they were pulling those giant,
the bank vault.
Through, and I was like, okay, this is now getting like totally ridiculous, but the stunts are still awesome. So I kind of stuck around for 2 movies basically because of the stunts and the driving. Because it still looked pretty cool. But the story itself, it's become so stupid. Mm-hmm. I've lost interest. I have not seen the last 3 movies, have no intent on seeing this one. I'm done. This franchise is dead to me. If I want to watch Fast and the Furious, I'm going to watch Tokyo Drift and like marvel, like revel in the gloriousness of how like sometimes cringeworthy that movie is, but it's still so good.
I will say one thing. There actually is a car race in this movie.
Wow. Really? Look at me. I'm so excited.
And nobody goes to space.
Yeah. No space stuff.
Yeah. That's actually disappointing at this point.
I'll say for me, the jumping off point was Fast and Furious 6 when they had the runway that just never ended.
Never ended?
They were just on the runway constantly.
That is Dan's pet peeve because he's a big plane guy. He's like, that runway, how long was that fucking runway? Yeah, that was his pet peeve.
Which one is the one with Ronda Rousey in it?
That would be, I want to say that's Fate of the Furious. No, yeah, and it's just like literally, no, that's Furious 7. It's literally one quick fight scene where Michelle Rodriguez just dispatches her almost easily.
And she was like, Ronda Rousey should not act.
No,
that was not a good
We've seen Expendables transition. 3. We know. She's the poor version of Gina Carano, and we all know how we feel about Gina Carano. Ooh.
What I think is the valuable contribution of the Fast and the Furious franchise is this really was the first franchise that had a very diverse cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of the like loyalty to it and the fact that people have sat through
family,
even though most of them are terrible, is the fact that this was the first really diversely casted film that hit mainstream, that became a hit. And I think that was so meaningful for people that they've sort of traded on that cachet for like another 9 movies.
A friend of mine brought up a point, though. He's like, one of their best friends died during the middle of making one of these films, and everybody probably checked out. And they're probably still a little checked out because it's not the same without Paul Walker.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
if these movies were true, then stop making the movie.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Vin, though. It's Vin, though. This is Vin's only, I mean, aside from saying I am Groot, this is Vin's only cash cow.
Yeah.
So saying goodbye to that is like, what's he going to do? Make shitty EDM?
But I mean, at this point, like he's got to be rolling in money. Oh, like,
for sure. Because I think so,
stop already.
Does he own a piece of?
He does.
I'm original sure film? He does. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure him and Moritz are like close. You know,
the rest of them don't have to come along on this ride.
This is it.
What does he have on them that he gets them to be?
Well, I have a feeling like for some of the original cast, or like original, like from. Four, I guess. I think it's really as part of like they just like it. They, like it's fun for them and they get paid. I'm sure they're getting paid like handsomely. And everybody else is like, it's a fucking paycheck and people will watch this movie.
Mm-hmm. I will say that Sung Kang has been the coolest motherfucker ever since Better Luck Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Just always been cool as shit. Mm-hmm. And I love that dude. I really do.
And he's the hottest guy in the franchise.
Sung Kang is.
I could go with that.
Yeah. He's really. It's funny that they bring in Natalie Emmanuel as like their tech person, and she gets progressively dumber each movie.
I don't get that.
It's so funny. It's so funny. And for Emrod, I mean, she had a better role in Dungeons and Dragons this year than she has in almost her whole career. So
she'll be fine.
Yeah. Exactly. And Letty is such a.
Come on, she's in fucking Avatar. She doesn't need Toph for anything.
She's such a blend of like this like tough action kick ass hero and like this soft foil for Vin Diesel that it doesn't make sense.
No. It never made sense.
No.
Ever.
No.
It makes less sense as the movies go on.
Yeah. I just don't see Michelle Rodriguez as a love interest. I see her as a heavy. That's it.
So is this a skip?
If you've already checked out, then yeah. But I mean, if you watch all these movies, I think you have a little tiny thing in yourself that is compelled to see what stupidity comes next.
They actually played this movie during A Clockwork Orange when they were prying his eyes open. It's terrible.
With Beethoven playing over top of it.
Yeah.
I will say, though, your like little teaser about Jason Momoa almost makes me want to see the movie.
This is what I'm thinking.
It's fun. Yeah. Right? And the little pigtails and stuff and his like pastel like blouses and stuff. It's really funny. And he's always giggling and laughing and hooting and hollering. Like he's never feels like he's like not in the driver's seat of his own story.
But it's obvious that they put time into that character to make him like that. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they do anything else?
Not to anybody, any other character. At least, because the last two movies had so much awkward Vin Diesel posturing where he was like obviously trying to like suck in a gut or look taller than people. And there wasn't, I didn't notice it as much in this movie as I have the last two films.
Yeah. Yeah, skip. Skip.
Okay. What's next?
Can we talk Spider-Man?
Okay, no spoilers, please.
Okay, no spoilers at all. Spider-Man Across the Universe is a fucking masterpiece.
It's the best movie of the year.
It was mesmerizing. I felt like the whole theater I melted away from me, and I was immersed in this film. I was all about it. It is chock full of heart and soul. Just a really wonderful script. Like I loved every character. Jason Schwartzman as the Spot is fucking fantastic. There's so much about this movie. And I mean, the way it starts and everything, it like separates itself a bit from Miles and becomes about Gwen. Like there's just so much great stuff in this film. Be warned, they did take the part one off the title, but it is a part one. There is going to be a second piece coming with Beyond. But I am so ready for it. And there's a twist in this movie. I have a question. Yes.
At your screening, did people not know there was a part two? And they all kind of audibly gasped.
Some of them
said to be continued.
Yeah. Some of them did.
My whole entire theater went, whoa. Or like, it was like, they had no idea.
The first trailer said part one.
The first trailer.
And I think people just kind of forget. What bummed me out, and I just because it's the stupid awards politics, it is disqualified from competing.
Why?
Two live action scenes.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. It's the same reason Lego Movie was disqualified, is because that one live action scene with Will Ferrell.
And I think Sony will probably try to fight that.
I think they should because it is the most dynamic and gorgeous looking film, animated film that I've seen this year and for a while too. Actually, no, I'll put Puss in Boots in there because goddamn, that movie is way better than it should be.
That's good.
I think this and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles are going to be the big movies this year as far as pushing the boundary, pushing the line for animated films.
Yep. It's certainly not Pixar. Sorry.
No. Oh, Elemental looks awful.
I heard some good stuff out of Cannes.
Oh, really? Okay. It just does not look appealing to me whatsoever.
I know, like, visually, it's not really doing anything particularly new, and I think that's hurting it as well. But yeah, the buzz out of Cannes seems to be on the up and up.
I wasn't a huge fan of Inside Out, to be honest, so... It kind of reminds me.
Not really
me of
for
that.
Me either. Yeah.
Steve's that there. Guy. Wow.
Okay. So am I. I'm that girl. I'm not a huge fan.
I wasn't a big fan of Inside Out. I don't think it's a bad movie. I thought it was good. I just don't think it's top tier Pixar at all.
So, yeah, I think this is the best film I've seen since Dune. And that's been like two years? These two movies feel like what Logan is to the Marvel Universe. This like raising the bar to something that's just should have been, but you didn't expect it. And then when it hits, it's like, holy shit. The look is incredible. Like every scene changes into like a different comic book almost. It's lots of cool little Easter eggs about certain animators and versions of Spider-Man and little in-jokes, which I really enjoyed. I enjoyed the characters. They all have little arcs where you find out about their character and you love them. And I really wanted this to actually be Spider-Gwen's movie because it starts with Spider-Gwen and you totally get into her character and you want more of it. So hopefully that's the next movie after the next movie, the Spider-Gwen movie, because she's awesome. Hailee Steinfeld does the voice and she does an incredible job. I was blown away. I didn't know what to do after this movie. I thought this was just the best thing I've seen in a very long time. And the fact that it's going to make, I think, $150 million this weekend shows that other people are really into it too. The coolest thing in the movie is, Peter Parker's kid and her little spider mask.
Mayday.
It's the greatest thing I've seen in a movie in a very long time. It's a freaking slam dunk. It's the best. It's probably good unless something comes out of the blue. I think it's going to be the best film of the year.
Dune Part 2?
I don't know.
Have we forgotten about this?
I know, but this, you wait. This is
I am fully ready for this to kick ass because the first one was amazing. So
wasn't it a Vancouver based animation studio that did most of the
Sony did this and Sony did most of this one as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
And I another thing, and I don't think it's a spoiler at all, but Daniel Kaluuya is always the coolest person I've ever seen. And he voices Spider-Punk in this, which is one of the coolest Spider-Man characters in my opinion. So it's just like, oh, that's perfect. And as soon as I heard his voice, I'm like, oh.
Or British accent.
No, he's got a British accent. Yeah, because he's straight out of the
real,
UK.
His real accent.
Yeah, okay. he's straight out of Sex Pistols UK. Like even all the animation around him is very anarchy in the UK and everything. And it's just, I mean, he's got a guitar slung on his back the whole time. And as soon as he speaks, I was just like, oh yeah. Because
his little intro vignette is just incredible.
It's so freaking good. And all the variants are so well done. It's hard. It's with you guys having seen the movie. I don't even want
to. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to talk about it, but
it's so good though. It's
It's really satisfying. And especially as a guy that's followed Spider-Man since I was a kid, to see like Josh Keaton's spectacular Spider-Man show up and all the different versions, the Scarlet Spider, and just like all these other like little things. It's just, yeah, it's the kid in you just kind of flies in this movie. And it is exhilarating. And once the credits hit, and no stingers, just regular credits.
Other than it reveals the third movie's title.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just came out of the theater feeling like awesome. Like just like that I'd really gotten more than my money's worth for sure.
I love that feeling. I really love that feeling. Also, I'm excited.
Also a shout out to Oscar Isaac.
Yes. Oh.
Lots of great performances voice wise in this film. It's top notch stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I also really adore Lauren Luna Velez and Brian Tyree Henry as Miles' parents. They're just so like, I love them. I love those characters. So Jeff and Rio are such great characters, especially when they're talking about like other people in Miles' lives and stuff like that. When there's like, oh, he called me Jeff. So I don't know. There's little things. And even in the trailer, I thought it was really, really funny and really subtle. When they're the principal's talking about Miles's marks, and the principal is Rachel Dratch with the character that looks like Rachel Dratch, which is also like pure perfection as well. But when she when the principal says that that Miles is only getting a B in Spanish, when Rio snaps at him, it's the Puerto Rican flag. She goes, "Oi, Miles!" Like that, and it's so great. Like just the little things. It's just there's so much love in this movie, and you can feel it every second.
Yeah, I can't wait for you guys to see this one. Mm-hmm. And Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yes, championing.
I'm not going to forget that one.
No, James Gunn demands that you see it.
I'll update the day I update Letterboxd is the day you know I've seen Guardians 3.
Bill's going to screenshot it and tweet it out. Finally.
Pretty much. I'm just
unless it's a bad review, and then he'd be plus. Like, keep moving.
That's my whole strategy with Marvel movies now is I just don't care enough. So I just wait for them to end up on Disney Plus. I will probably see the Spider-Man movie though, because it does sound amazing.
Yeah. It's on my list of all the things I'm going to see in Annecy. They're doing a screening of Spider-Man Across the Universe. I'm like, adding that to my calendar. That and TMNT, because that's fucking happening a month early.
It's going to be so good. It's going to be so good.
I'm very excited.
I'm really all about an AOAD April O'Neil.
I can't wait.
Every voice that she does in animation. I'm all
she's
about
really
it.
Talented. She's so she's good. Fabulous.
I also follow her on Letterboxd. So yeah, she's an avid movie watcher. So
what's next? And was there anything else new? Or is everything else kind of like?
Well, I can get one pre-release because it's going to be coming out on June 9th. After a delay of a couple weeks, but I just watched The Wrath of Becky last night, which is the follow-up to the film Becky, which was way better than I thought it was going to be, which featured a neo-Nazi Kevin James in such a random role, and it's just gory-ass revenge flick.
And this is the only reason we watched it was because of Kevin James.
It's so damn cool. I love that movie. And so now you've got Becky. She's a bit older now. She's kind of living with friends and working at a diner. When a group of dirtbags comes in, she gives them the gears. They end up coming to her new place and kind of stealing her dog and killing her friend, setting her on a whole new war path against a neo-Nazi leader, like a white power leader played by Sean William Scott in this movie. And it is so much fun still because Lulu Wilson kicks ass. She is such a great genre performer. And if they keep making Becky movies, I'm down for every single one.
I'll watch this one for sure. What else you got?
I only have one more, actually. I didn't watch much.
I have one more too, but I think it's the one that you're bringing.
I think it's the one I'm going to talk about. The new HBO/Crave movie, Reality. starring Sydney Sweeney from Euphoria in a completely different role. Like, she is dressed down, and as much as she is like the sex pot on Euphoria, she is a plain Jane in this movie. It looks completely different. Yeah, and it's like, honestly, one of my favorite performances of the year. Mm-hmm. She is incredible in this film, mm-hmm. which is a really tight, fat, like, it's a really quick watch, but it's one of the more claustrophobic films I've seen mm-hmm. in a very long time. You kind of feel like the walls are kind of crushing you the entire film. This woman, real name, not joking, her name is Reality Winner.
Reality Lee Winner.
Yeah, there we go. She returns home from buying groceries one day, and there's these FBI agents at her house, and they want to talk to her, and she has no idea what's going on. And they lead her into this spare bedroom, and where there's no chairs, there's like, it's just an empty room, and they talk. It's almost like a play for like the next 60 minutes, where they talk about how she works at a government job where she has access to information, and did she do this and did she do that? And it just progressively gets more and more and more hard to watch. And it's a really fast watch, but I really dug it. It's I don't know if it's going to be an Emmy film or an Oscar film, because I don't know if it played theatrically, but watch it for Sydney Sweeney. She is incredible.
I have to say as well, like, the main focus of this movie is that it is completely based on real dialogue off of real FBI interview tapes. So every dialogue you're hearing is the exact thing that's on these tapes, but that's the only thing that they kept true to it, because the blocking is all completely different. They're playing like almost like this undertone of pretty ominous and tension-filled music throughout it, that it almost brings it to almost like this Lynchian type weird level. Like, it reminded me of the Herzog and Lynch co-production with Michael Shannon, My Son, What Have You Done? It reminded me a bit like that, because there's some really great, one of the FBI agents is played by Josh Hamilton. And just some of the dialogue or like the off the cuff, like trying to make her feel comfortable, feels weird and tension filled and stuff. And then like certain things, like she asks for a glass of water and he just like goes out of the room, comes back in, he stands there for a few seconds, and then he just goes, water. And he just like hands it to her. It's just like so weird. There's also a scene where like they're in the room and one of the other FBI just leans in and goes, is this a room? Is this a room? Is this a room? And then he leaves. And you're like, what was that? Like, there's such weird stuff, but you know, because of the beginning, the prescript of the film, you know that it's off of the tape, but just how they construct it, it's so strange and off kilter. And I really, really love that about it.
It also has a really amazing way of getting around stuff being redacted.
Yes.
I'm not going to spoil it, but it's incredible.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that before. It's just, yeah, when it happened, it was like jarring. I was just like, wow. Okay. That's really cool. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And nobody's really talking about it. So like Marina, I don't think any even heard of it. So
it's like in a microcosm corner of film Twitter. There are people talking about it here and there. And I think it's really just because of Sydney Sweeney's involvement, but honestly, I think if people watch it, they'll, because I think she's got like this kitsch value because of Euphoria and just kind of like this one gear. And of course, all this controversy now with Glenn Powell and all that stuff. But I think this could shut a lot of critics up about her, or people that just don't like her as a person, because I think she's got some serious talent, and just how dressed down this performance is really something.
Can you please get your cat? Get your cat. Can you please get your cat? It's like weird. This the weirdest dialogue. Like, it's you're so right on that.
Yeah, it's monotone. There's no inflection to it. Even her negotiating and trying to get in and get her dog, like, and which is kind of the kickoff to you're like, this is strange. This is weird. Like, people do talk like this, but they're not with this no inflection flatness. So yeah, it's an interesting just how they constructed it. I can't even imagine. So I'm really curious to see what this filmmaker does next.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Melissa?
I've seen very little, but on June 1st, which is the anniversary of Marilyn Monroe's birthday, I went to the Rio to watch Gentlemen Prefer Blondes on the big screen, which I've seen that movie a million times. I've never seen it on the big screen, so that was like a huge treat to see it in all of its Technicolor glory. And I adore that movie. I think I was maybe 12 or 13 the first time I saw it, and I've seen it like a million times. And it was very hard to not sing along to all the songs, but I didn't want to subject the Rio going public to any of that. But it's phenomenal. Jane Russell is terrific. It is way racier than it should be for a film from like, I think 1953. And Marilyn Monroe is just in her full power. She's just brilliantly using all of her feminine wiles to manipulate her way around that screen and around the character. And it's a pretty great film. And the Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend musical number, one of the greatest songs on screen.
Fully agree. I love that movie. Jane Russell is my absolute favorite. And in that movie, she is so, so good. I remember the first time I saw it, I was like, who is that? Like, yeah, Marilyn is great, but who the fuck is that? Who's the brunette? I want to be her.
She is the queen of quips in that
movie. She's so good. Yeah. It's such a great film. I love it. I've also never seen it on the big screen. So that was a lot of fun.
It was worth it. There was actually a pretty good crowd for that.
Oh, good.
For like a Thursday night, gorgeous, gorgeous, like spring evening. There were quite a lot of people in the crowd, which was
good. Good, good. I actually have movies and some new stuff, go figure. So I saw Still, the Michael J. Fox movie, which is on Apple TV Plus. And I thought it was pretty good. I don't really have anything else to say about it other than it was interesting and there was stuff about Michael J. Fox that I didn't actually realize. I know very little about him as a person, just as the actor. So it was interesting to get a little behind the scenes of him and what he was like and to find out that he was not just the pretty boy that he appears to be on screen.
Burnaby's finest.
Burnaby's finest, mm-hmm. Indeed.
It made me really sad to see him at such a state. I didn't know it was that bad.
That bad.
Mm-hmm. When watching him walk,
when he flies out of his shoes,
I was just like, "Wow, okay, that's life can be really tough, man." Like, when he walks, he falls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and it's scary.
But his humility about all of that is what is so endearing, and his humor through it, and that he is still at his core the same guy, and he's honestly such a champion in that sense. And I really 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 loved this film. I think him and Davis Guggenheim constructed such a well told story of his life through a way that was just so immersive, like using footage, like real footage and reenactment stuff to get seamlessly together to construct Mike's story is so, so cool to me.
Yeah, I agree. I was really impressed. I thought it was really, really well done. I watched Dark Nature, which is actually a Canadian horror film out of Edmonton, I want to say. Berkeley Brady, her feature film debut. It's basically about a group of women, one of whom does not believe in psychiatry, but her friend is basically dragging her on this weekend camping trip with a shrink that's going to make her all better. So they go out into the Rocky Mountains and shit goes wrong very, very quickly. And it's about basically these women that are being hunted by this entity. It's quite good. It's like I said, it's a feature film debut. It has some really great horror elements. It's all practical effects. Really amazing score from a little Canadian band called Ghostkeeper that sounds nothing like, they're like very poppy, sounds nothing like their music, but the score is really impressive. A really solid little horror movie featuring really great performances.
Do you think Edmonton is the new Canadian horror capital? Because didn't Skinamarink come out of there too?
It might well be. I think that there's currently a moment. I mean, and there's at least, you know, two or three other filmmakers in Calgary and Edmonton that are working in that sort of realm. So I wouldn't be surprised at all. But yeah, I really enjoyed it and I would recommend it. It's definitely one worth looking out for. I caught up with The Lost King, which has been on my to watch list for a year, maybe longer. Stephen Frears' latest movie about Philippa Langley, who is an amateur historian who was trying to find the lost remains of Richard III. They'd been like missing for 500 years. And so the movie is basically like an adaptation of her book about her story to try to uncover the bones. And I really latched onto it because it stars Sally Hawkins, who I really like. And she is really, really good in it. The movie is just kind of like, it's not the best Stephen Frears. It's very meddling, but her performance is quite good. And the movie is really charming. So there's that. Finally, Rogue Agent, which I think is on Netflix. I don't remember where I watched this now.
I legit
watched this because James Norton is really fucking hot. I will put it out there. No issue saying that. And Gemma Arterton is not bad to look at either. I really enjoyed this. So James Norton plays Robert Freegand, who was a free guard, it's based on a true story. He played he was a con man that would basically take not just women, but mostly women for all of their money. He pretended to be an MI5 agent. And then, you know, he met Gemma Arterton and she was more than he bargained for. And she essentially like makes it her life's goal to take him down. And it's quite good. I really enjoyed it. Really good performances, kind of like a low key movie, but definitely not a bad watch for like a Saturday afternoon. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. And then last night we watched Blackberry, which I won't get into extreme detail about because you guys talked about it last week, but you were totally right. That movie is awesome. I was fully on board from the beginning. It's so good.
Yeah.
So, so, so good.
Yeah.
Did you like the greatness of Doug?
Doug is fucking awesome. The soundtrack is fucking banging. I'm like, okay, Steve brought it up. This every song. I'm like, how did they get all of these rights on a $5 million budget?
Yeah.
Did it all go to music rights? Like,
Matt Johnson rules.
Oh yeah, it's impressive. I love that movie. It's so good.
It is. The phone scene. Well, there's two phone
which
scenes.
Which one? With Ben Howard. I was going to say which
the
one.
The first one where he destroys the landline. I out of nowhere almost just, and even Doug's like, what the fuck? Like, what was that? And then the payphone scene. Oh, just Glenn Howerton and phones in that movie. And the Glenn Howerton, the scene with Jim in the NHL meeting as well.
Okay, yeah, Dan has like, he fucking hates Bettman, like with a passion. So Dan's like, oh yeah, that's exactly what the guy deserves. Such an asshole. Yeah. He's not a fan at all.
That scene is Glenn Howerton's like Oscar reel.
Oh man.
He's so fucking good in this movie. And even, I love the dynamic of Jay's performance, how it shifts throughout the film. I think that's interesting as well.
I was super impressed. It's like that final sort of jump forward where he's kind of basically running the ship on his own.
He's Jim.
And he is just like, he's just Jim. Not that guy. It's pretty crazy. It was really good. You guys did you were not out on left field on that one. It was excellent.
You just kind of hope that a movie like this still is in people's memory when it comes to October, November, December, but probably won't be.
it's left to us to champion it.
Yeah, it really is.
I actually read an article about how it's it just passed $1 million in Canada.
That's awesome.
Which is very rare for a film of Canadian heritage to actually go past $1 million.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. Plus, I also heard that CBC is putting out a miniseries.
Wow.
They, Uncle Rim. Of that.
Oh, that's good.
They shot more stuff. And part of the deal of CBC funding it was that they were going to make a miniseries about it.
That's awesome.
I will watch it.
Yeah,
I'm so all that's coming. It. That's coming soon.
I'm all
I hope it's
it.
More like this, because this had for me *Halt and Catch Fire* vibes, which
yep.
I mm-hmm. love that show. Mm-hmm. So I am all in for it. Give me all the BlackBerry content.
Now that we're also talking about it for a second time, I also want to bring up that I really love Rich Sommer in this movie. He's very quick, but the Microsoft stuff, just I really like that stuff.
There's a lot to love in this movie.
Yeah, there really is. Yeah.
A lot to love.
Yeah.
Is that's that it? That's it?
That's all I got.
Do you guys want to pick a movie for next show?
Yeah. What's coming up first, Mr. Bill?
Okay, so last episode we talked about Transformers, but we're recording early, so I'll say it again. June 9th, Transformers Rise of the Beast. Let's pick that film.
No. Hard pass.
Okay. Hard pass. Okay. Okay. I tried. I tried.
Yeah. I felt it.
June 16th, Pixar presents Elemental.
Nah. I'm going to say nah.
Nah? How about The Flash?
I'll watch The Flash, but I don't know if I would recommend it as the movie.
I have my tickets for Flash already. When is it in July that we're recording next?
Yeah, it'll probably be the first weekend of July.
Is it too broad to say that we could cover Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny by then?
I don't see why not.
There's a couple other movies that will maybe be bigger than that, but we'll get to that in a second. Including this one. Asteroid City,
which got a 7-minute standing ovation at Cannes, which is not a lot of movies get standing ovations at Cannes, so it's like not a big thing, but it's Wes Anderson and this cast is great. Am I gonna get in Penticton? I don't know.
That's
I'm very hit or miss on Wes Anderson, to be totally honest.
I love him, I adore him, I want to do that movie.
Yeah.
Come on, Melissa's vote.
Yeah. Because
just for the podcast, if I ever win the lottery, I'm moving you back to Vancouver, buddy. This is becoming a real pain in the ass. Right? You know what I mean?
And Bill, right? Does that mean you're also moving to Vancouver if you win?
Sure, why not?
Yay.
Yes.
And we could do this shit live. That'd be cool.
That'd be awesome. I don't know if we're getting Joyride out here either. I probably not. But Joyride looks freaking great.
Now that was the next one.
Yes.
June 23rd. Have you guys seen this Jennifer Lawrence trailer?
Yes.
No hard feelings.
It looks funny to me. I don't know why, but
I'm with you. I'm with you, Steve.
The throat punch thing makes me laugh every time.
Actually, I really like the new cut of the trailer where they're making it sound like it's like this very highbrow Jennifer Lawrence performance. And she's like, and then it's her, can I look at your wiener? I cannot help it. I laugh every single time.
He's my cousin. Then he comes up in front behind her and grabs her boobs. She's like, second cousin.
I can't help it. I laugh. I do laugh every time I see it.
I don't know.
I never said I was mature.
Yeah. I'm about seeing a Jennifer Lawrence dirtbag film. I don't know. I'm kind of.
I'm in for it.
Yeah.
Okay, so not that one, Melissa. All right. So Past Lives goes wide on the 23rd. So hopefully Steve maybe gets a link by then.
I hope so, yeah.
Hope so.
Yeah.
June 30th, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I heard things from Khan, good and bad. I just want to see it.
Well, what's a terrible James Mangold movie? What's a truly, 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 to its core,
he's got you there.
Terrible James Mangold movie?
He actually made one of Tom Cruise's better films, Night and Day.
Yep.
That's a really watchable film.
Which is probably that and Kate and Leopold are probably at the bottom of the barrel, right?
Yeah.
Yep. And they're not bad movies.
They're not bad movies.
And you guys probably know my feelings of Logan. So
I love Logan. I love Identity. Yeah. I really liked Ford v Ferrari.
Oh, so good.
310 to Yuma. Walk the line. I mean,
he's really good at what he does, man.
That's why I'm having it hard. I'm like, oh, Indiana Jones is terrible. Like, is that he's gotten this far in his career and just been like, I'm gonna make a shit movie
with a really great cast? Unlikely. I mean, it might not be for everybody, and it might not be the Indiana Jones people are maybe expecting, but I doubt it's gonna be terrible.
And I think it was just the last one was so disappointing. So,
yeah, I think so too.
But the minute that you put like Phoebe Waller-Bridge in this, I'm like, okay, I'm in. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. with you. Like, totally. That was the selling point for me.
Yeah, definitely.
If he gets into another fridge, I walk, though.
Fair. He's literally going to get up and walk out of the theater.
No, he's going to swing with the monkeys, though.
No, you never know. Also that week, an animated film hadn't even heard of until 20 minutes or 30 minutes ago, Ruby Gilman Teenage Kraken. It's from a major studio.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, my daughter.
I don't think anybody does.
So not that one. All right, cool. That's it. I want to see Asteroid City, but that's the one for me.
But we'll see if I get it.
Okay, so we're going to say Asteroid City, and then there was another one in there.
Past Lives.
Past Lives. And then
Indiana
Jones.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones will be guaranteed for me. I'll be seeing that. So I've already got my ticket, so.
Okay, happening.
Steve with those, like, month in advance tickets all the time.
As soon as they go on sale, I grab it.
Yeah.
And even, like, the market out here, I don't need to, but I think it's my lower mainland ingrained instinct to just to grab the ticket. Just so it's guaranteed that that's my seat, the seat that I like to sit in. That's mine.
Yep.
We all have our seats.
Absolutely. We do. Actually, morning screenings actually changed up how I do that. I kind of figured out exactly what
press screening. I hate the press screenings in the morning because I'm the only person that sits in the fucking back. It's weird.
You need buddies.
All right, kids, that was fun.
That was great. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks with Indiana Jones and probably Asteroid City. I think that's how I'm reading the room, and maybe Past Lives if everybody has a chance to see it, or at least some of us will have a chance to see it and maybe talk about it. Maybe not me.
And Melissa's book report on Not Hard Feelings.
Yes.
Okay, I love J-Law. I can't get behind that movie. Sorry.
And I will try to bring back insights from the animation capital of the universe that will become Annecy for a week. So I'll try to bring back dirt. Awesome. But until then, folks, where can people find you?
Steve's going last again.
Okay. Steve's going last.
I am Bill Harris. I am on Twitter at SoundJam69. Also the same on Letterboxd. And have a good month. And the Succession finale was great. There we go.
Melissa?
I am Melissa McDowell. I am hardly ever on Twitter, but there as Melzy Tweets. And also on Letterboxd is Melissa McDowell. And the season finale of Ted Lasso was a giant disappointment.
I cried.
Really?
Oh, I fucking cried like through that entire episode.
Yeah, I did too. Wow. Especially the Nate stuff annihilated me.
Oh yeah, though. No. Like the whole like, we'll just spoil it. The belief banner thing just fucking broke me. Yeah. That was crying mess.
They showed the coach's dick and balls.
Which is hilarious.
It was hilarious. And the downfall of Rupert. Funny. Oh, it was perfect.
It was so funny. Yeah. It was pretty great.
You guys and I have different thoughts on humor.
Clearly. I mean, we love the movie everybody hates. Hot Rod is still the greatest thing ever. So you know where we land.
That's right.
And I'm Marina Antunes. You can find me on Instagram at TheMarina2 and on Letterboxd as TheMarina. And I don't tweet anymore, so we won't even go there. And last but not least.
I'm at the Steeple Dead on Twitter and Instagram. I believe I'm that on Letterboxd as well. You can hear me every Thursday at 11 p.m. Pacific on The Shift with Shane Hewitt. That one's across Canada, so check your local listings. And I'm also on Tremble the Horror Podcast, and that one's a weekly show with Kurt and Taylor. The last movies we did, I hated. Because we did The Monster Club with Vincent Price, who is like the only highlight of watching that movie whatsoever. And then we also did All Hallows Eve, which is Damien Leone's like the first like Terrifier, like Art the Clown type thing. Mm. And I fucking hated Terrifier. I have not watched Terrifier 2. I just need more of a plot than just watching a gore fest, I think. And so I don't give a shit about either of those movies. And I did not give a shit about All Hallows Eve either. So, spoiler on that one. But I was really hard on those movies. So, yeah. And, that's it for me.
And you can find show notes for everything we talked about today and links to everybody's socials on the website at atcpod.ca. Also in the show notes, if you are looking at like Spotify or Apple Podcasts or Google, there are show notes embedded inside with chapter marks and everything. So, hey, you can skip around if there's something that you don't want to hear about. And we'll be back in a couple of weeks. So until then.
Hack the planet.
Hack the planet.
Bye. Thank you.